Welcome back to another edition of Drop the Mitts Hockey Podcast, brought to you in partnership with Drop the Mitts Hockey. I am your host, Chris Davis, and we are joined today by Tim Peel. Over 1,300 games, 1,362, 90 playoff games, refereed in two Winter Classics, the Sochi Olympics, and the host of the Snipes and Stripes podcast on the No Filter Network. Tim, how you doing? Thank you so much for being here.
I'm great, Chris. Thanks for having me on. It's nice to finally meet you.
Yeah, for sure. And like, again, we've gone back and forth a few times, so I'm excited that we can finally get on here. And especially this time of year, right, with playoff hockey, there's no better time of the year. And I'll kind of just kick it off right away, you know, with this Florida-Tampa series. You know, what an unbelievable series. Kind of, you know, I'd followed a couple tweets that you had put out last night. I think the biggest storyline isn't even the Florida Panthers winning. It's, you know, what's going to happen with Stamkos and the rest of this Tampa team. Do you think this is the end of Steven Stamkos in Tampa?
That's a great question. I don't think so. I think you'll find a way to re-sign him. I can't see him playing anywhere else. I know he loves it there. It's unfortunate because that really, to me, wasn't a five-game series. Tampa, I think, deserved a better fate. I think it could have gone easily six, maybe seven. Bad luck last night with the goals called back. The first one I didn't agree with on Duclair. The second one I did agree with. And it's funny because the Tampa fans and podcast people from Tampa were like, watch it. There's clear evidence Mikkola pushed him in. I'm like, I don't see Mikkola pushing him in. You know, it's unfortunate. Yeah. But, you know, it's playoff hockey. I was rooting for, you know, John Cooper's a friend of mine. I was rooting for him. But Florida's just too good. You know, they're the Tampa Bay Lightning of 3 or 4 years ago. And they're just too strong, too deep. Getting tremendous goaltending with Bobrovsky.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that indicates to me that this isn't a team that can go back to the Stanley Cup finals again this year and may win it. That's how good Florida is.
Yeah, that was my next question. I mean, is this a team that you can see going the distance? Because it doesn't look like anyone's – I mean, for them to go and beat this Tampa team who was absolutely loaded this year, I mean, Nikita Kucherov having a heart-like season – obviously, they didn't have Vasilevsky early on, but, you know, as of late, they're a hell of a team, and they pretty much waxed them. Is this a team that you think can completely go the distance? And if so, what do you think the biggest factors of that? You know, Matthew Tkachuk's playing unbelievable hockey right now. Alex Barkov is probably going to win the Selke, you know, finally, now that Bergeron's gone. You know, what are the biggest components of this team that make them so lethal?
I think is the depth. You know, you look at Sam Bennett, you look at the Carter Verhaeghe's, their back end is deep. Forsling, Ekblad, they just, you know, they've got it all. They're just a solid, solid hockey team. You know, it took a lot of balls for Bill Zito to trade a guy that just came off 110, 115 points. In Jonathan Huberto. That took a lot of balls to do that. You know, not many GMs would have made that decision in that trade. But he knew that what it takes to win in the playoffs. He wanted to change the identity of that team a little bit. And Matthew Tkachuk just leads by example. You know, I'm a little biased. I've known Matthew since he was 4 years old. And it's just, he's an incredible young man. Great family. He does everything the right way. And you know what? I it didn't even dawn on me until the announcer said it last night. What a great series that he had. And he only had two penalty minutes the entire series. So he took one minor penalty in five games. That is completely different than the Matthew Tkachuk of last year's playoffs. And good for him. He's not getting involved in all that extracurricular stuff, right. Staying away from it, and I think it's going to pay off for him down the long run when it comes to the third round and maybe the Stanley Cup Finals, where he's going to have a little, because you use a lot of energy when you're in there scrumming it up and punching guys and getting punched in the face and tackled to the ice, and that takes a lot out of you over three or four series.
Right.
So good for him for recognizing that and maturing as a player.
Yeah, and honestly, I was going to bring up the fact, you know, a guy very similar that's kind of having a similar playoff is Brad Marchand, right? Like, a guy that we know, you know, he's not afraid to muck it up. He's not afraid to get, you know, in the dirty areas. But he just, it feels like both of those guys are very calculated in how they're going about, you know, this in the scrappy areas. Like, you're not seeing either of them take dumb penalties. You see guys like Max Domi trying to get under his skin. Tyler Bertuzzi, same thing. And you're just seeing a different Brad Marchand. And that's exactly how I felt about Matthew Tkachuk. Like, they're trying to get him going. Guys like Tanner Janot. And they're just on a different level right now, dialed in as leaders. And that's, you know, ultimately why Florida's moving on, along with, you know, the goaltending and everything else that comes along with it.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head, Chris. They're dialed in as leaders. And that's what Matthew and Brad Marchand are. They're leaders. They lead by example. You know, I said to Shukri writes
absolutely
on a show last week, and I said about Brad Marchand, I said this is the difference with Brad Marchand and Austin Matthews, and now I can include Nylander and Marner in this conversation too, is Brad Marchand will cross check you in the face. He'll spear you in the throat. He may try to kill you to score a goal. Like, that's the intestinal fortitude and the will that this guy has. Nothing is going to stop him from just carrying the team and leading them, hopefully, to the next series. Because, you know what, I got to be honest, I'm tired of the Toronto media. I'm tired of the Toronto fans. They're the most entitled fan base I've ever seen in professional sports. The last time they won a cup was 1957. I was a year old, or 1967. I was a year old. So think about this. The last time they won a Stanley Cup, there were six teams in the league. The law of averages says you're going to win a Stanley Cup and there's six teams in the league, okay? But right. They act like they're this fan base that we should just all bow down to. And I guess the reason people are like, oh, you were like this. You must have been like this when you ref. No, I wasn't. I just went out and did my job. But now that I'm out of the game, and I see the comments, and I'm like, you guys have been blaming the officiating and the refereeing for as long as I can remember. Every series, every year, it's like death and taxes. It's like you guys blame the officiating every year. And guess what? Newsflash: good teams don't blame the officiating, and so I hope Boston. I hope Boston wins tonight, just so I can see their heads explode in Toronto. Because it's and you know what? I think it would be a better series. Boston, Florida would be.
Yeah.
I think that's correct, right? Boston would play Florida.
Yep.
And it would be a tremendous series. And talk about, you know, you saw some Florida Boston games this year. It got nasty.
It did.
Really nasty. Yeah. So hopefully we'll see that.
You know, I'm glad you brought up the fan base aspect of things, because very, very rarely, you know, being on social media, am I one that is going to clap back at people? Because, you know what, at the end of the day, we're all behind phones, right? And that's all that it is. You know, one of the most nauseating things that I saw was, you know, after they lost that last game, someone had put out a tweet about another marathon bombing. And it's like that is literally what we're, you know, and just having, like, my brother and mom were at the marathon, granted not near it, but still, like, that's the point that we're getting at. That's where you're at as a fan base. To that extent, it's just, they take it way too far. And, like, you know what? There's fans in every fan base that ruin it for everyone. But you know what? I feel like this Toronto, you're seeing it more and more every year that they don't win, and it's nauseating. And you said it, Tim, the lack of accountability, and it's not even in the fan base. It's with Sheldon Keefe as well. I can't stand listening to this guy, because
no.
You brought it up on Shukri's podcast, actually, funny enough, that Jim Montgomery was going to outcoach Sheldon Keefe, and that's exactly what has happened. Sheldon Keefe has taken no initiative. He doesn't know how to respond to the media, and this whole thing has been a circus.
Listen, Pat, you know, you've seen my tweets about Pat Maroon. I love Pat Maroon.
Right.
Like he's a buddy of mine. I was pumping his tires after the first period of game one. I tweeted out Pat Maroon just had an awesome first period for his first playoff game with the Boston Bruins. But I can tell you this, if they're down two goals in 3 minutes to go, I don't know if Pat's going to see a lot of ice time unless there's a power play, okay? Right. Well, Sheldon Keefe in the last 3 minutes had Ryan Reeves out there when they're two goals down. Now, I don't even think Ryan Reeves should be in the lineup, let alone on the ice with 3 minutes to go when you're down two goals. You need to be double shifting your first and second line. You're just running those two lines, maybe the third line. But you've only got 3 minutes left, so you're running the first line and the second line. You're not even thinking about putting Ryan Reeves out there. So right. I don't know what he was thinking. And when you mentioned that you can't stand listening to the guy, well, if they win tonight, I don't think you're going to have to listen to him too much longer because I cannot see how he's going to keep his job in Toronto. Even though Brad Treleving, who I have a lot of respect for, the GM of Toronto, gave him a 3-year deal, so that means he's got 2 years left after this year. Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment have deep pockets, and I can see them just buying him out and bringing in a Craig Berube or a Todd McClellan or a Joel Quenneville or somebody that's got good experience, good track record. Sheldon Keefe has done nothing. He's been in Toronto for 6 years, I think. For four years and 5 years, and hasn't done anything. He got them out of the first round once, so
right.
I can't see him being there much longer.
Yeah, you just mentioned the perfect example of something I wanted to bring up was the Ryan Reeves thing, right? He was supposed to be this big protector. He was supposed to be this big enforcer, and first goal of game one, he's the reason they freaking score. He decides that he wants to go throw a late check with one defenseman behind him, and he lets up a 2-on-1, and it's little plays like that. That you got to know you only got one defenseman back, and then he had the primary assist on JVR's goal last game. So, again, it's just those on-the-fly adjustments that he's just not able to make. And that brings up my next point. Like, if they lose tonight, what is next? You got to think Keefe's out. And then what's happening with that core? Because I don't think any of those four guys have it. And by it, I mean just, like, the leadership and even John Tavares. I've heard you say that, you know, you would have stripped the C after that Timothy Liljegren play. And I was at that game. No one did a goddamn thing. You know, Reeves was barking from the bench. And then, you know, and again, no one touched Marchand. No one did anything. And that right there for me was like, there's something seriously wrong here.
Yeah, I agree 100% with you. And I that blew my mind when nobody did anything. And that's when I went off and on our podcast with Jeremy Roenick, and I said I'd strip his captaincy, and you're the captain of the team. Like, can you imagine if Brad Marchand or Matthew Tkachuk or Nathan MacKinnon or any of these guys that have balls and pride and so, like, you didn't do anything. Like, John Tavares, you've been in Toronto for 6 years. You got out of the first round once. You did nothing in Long Island, and that team became better after you got traded. And he's just not the leader of the team. And Austin Matthews is a prolific goal scorer. And Jeremy Roenick said one time, he goes, he thinks he'll go down as the greatest U.S. born goal scorer. And he might achieve those stats one day. But as far as leadership skills, I don't see it in him. I don't see it in Marner. Willie Nylander, I don't get what's going on with him. Listen, I was talking to Scott Mellenby last night, longtime NHL player who played the game tough and hard and so on. And I asked him, I said, did you see that interview with Nylander? And they asked him, how are you feeling? Oh, good. I feel great. I've been skating for the past 3 days. I feel good. Well, you've been skating for the past 3 days and you feel good. How come you haven't been playing? Like, I don't understand. I don't understand what's going on there. And then Austin Matthews is sick and can't play the third period. I'm telling you right now, if Ryan O'Reilly, who I have a lot of respect for, he would never leave the game because he was sick. I don't care how sick he was. I do not care. I just don't believe it. I don't believe Nathan MacKinnon would do that. There's certain guys that I just – and he left because he had a – his tummy was aching. He had a – maybe he was puking. I don't know. But now they're saying they don't know if he's going to be available for tonight's game. How are you not available for tonight's game? This is an elimination game. You better be out there. And whether it's – whether you're playing half the ice time that you normally play, but they need you in that lineup. So I don't get it.
It's funny, Tim, you bring up a guy like Ryan O'Reilly because they had him sitting right there, right? And I heard you say with Shukri, it's like, you know, you didn't give away the whole conversation, but along the lines of he didn't like the environment that was in there. And to have a captain, he's been a captain before. As soon as he showed up to Nashville, he got a letter. And the only reason why he probably didn't have the C was because Roman Josi was already there. Exactly. And so, you know, that's really telling a longtime leader, a guy that devotes – would give anything, you know, to hoist the cup again. It's like very telling that he wanted out.
You know, Sean Avery, who's very controversial, he was on our show a few months ago. He was awesome.
Yeah. And he's hilarious.
He made a statement. And at the time I thought he was smoking weed or doing mushrooms or something, because I'm like, dude, where did this come from? But he said he would have traded Marner and Matthews.
I remember him saying that.
Well, you know what? That might not look too bad right now. And you know, it's I don't know. There's just something about those three guys that they got the money, they're living in Toronto, they're rock stars in Toronto, then they don't know how to win. And I'm not saying they don't want to win, but if we don't win, you know what? We're going golfing at our private country club tomorrow. And I just don't see the heart and the fight that I see in a Marchand and other guys that like Krejci and Bergeron and these guys, Chara, and these guys that I just respected so much.
Yeah, you know, and again, and not to beat a dead horse talking Toronto, but like it's very odd to me all these, you know, the turn of events. You mentioned the Willie Nylander thing. Mitch Marner, again, he's been given everything, right? He got the contract, no hometown discount. Again, he's playing with Matthews. He's gotten everything that he's asked for, that he's, you know, needed to be successful. And then come playoff time, it's the same shit every year. So I don't know what else it is he is needing.
Scared of his own shadow. You know, we saw that play the other night in Boston where McAvoy's going in and Marner just cuts in.
I couldn't believe that.
I'm not going in to get the puck first. You go get it, Charlie, and I may make an effort and try to get it from you. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens tonight. I just listen. You don't. If I'm Boston, and I don't know if it's been out there or not, but I'm starting Swayman again because he's
100% agree.
And I'm putting them away in five because you do not want to give them any hope, because they win game five, they go back to Toronto, anything can happen.
Yeah.
Matthews gets on fire, Samsonov or Wool steal a game, you know, Boston hits a few posts, like bad luck. You don't know what's going to happen in game six, especially when you're on the road. You need to put them away tonight and get some rest too for the next matchup against Florida.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, another thing on the Bruins, a guy I wanted to talk to you about, a guy that I know you know very well, is a guy, Trent Frederick, who really has emerged in the last, you know, 2-3 years, not just as a fighter, but as a phenomenal power forward, you know, a penalty killer, a guy who can put the puck in the net. You know, what are your thoughts? He obviously won the 7th player award this year for the Bruins, which I thought was awesome, well-deserved. What are your thoughts on a guy like Freddie? I mean, he's a fan favorite here.
Yeah, I love Trent. You know, I much like Matthew, I'm good friends with Trent's dad, Bob. We play a lot of golf together. Bob became a Boston fan favorite. When Trent had his first
That was the best video.
When Bob and Gage tried to high-five each other and they missed each other.
Awesome.
They're just an awesome family. I've known Trent since he was 3, 4, 5 years old. And it's funny, though, how, you know, Trent was taken in the draft with 4 other kids from St. Louis, Clayton Keller, Joseph Wohl, Matthew Tkachuk, and I'm missing one. But anyway, there were 5 guys taken in the first round out of Toronto, which was just unheard of, or out of St. Louis, which was just unheard of. And he was taken 30th overall, and people were like, you know, but you know what? Not all first rounders are 50 goal scorers. First rounders are leaders. They lead by example with their work ethic. And it's ironic or funny because under Bruce Cassidy, Bruce did not like Trent for whatever reason. He really didn't treat him that well, and Trent was very frustrated, and the family was very frustrated, and they didn't think that he was going to be in Boston much longer. And it's amazing what a new coach does. But see, Jimmy Montgomery lived in St. Louis for a long time. He knows Bob Frederick very well. He knows Trent well. He knows him as a man, as a person, not just a hockey player. And he's like, he's got these characteristics that I need. And Boston, he emulates. He's perfect Boston Bruin, and him getting 18 career high in goals today, this year, is just the ceiling. I think he can be a 20 goal guy in this league, and he's loved by his teammates, and that tells you something of what kind of person he is. His teammates absolutely love him, and I'm really happy for him. And that's the kind of guy you need in the playoffs, and that's kind of what Toronto's missing right now.
Right. And, you know, a lot of people forget that he played at Wisconsin, right? So he's playing in college hockey. He wasn't a fighter. Like, he wasn't fighting in college hockey. And the thing that stands out most to me, and that tells me a lot about his character and what he's willing to do, he was literally willing to turn into a fighter, to turn the tides on games. He was willing to do whatever it took to try to get minutes under Bruce Cassidy. And you started kind of seeing the same thing with Johnny Beecher, right? Kind of getting buried under there, first round pick. And now you're starting to see Johnny Beecher now play consistent fourth line minutes. So it's a testament on what kind of player Trent Frederick is and what he was willing to do to get into that lineup.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Trent, you know, I don't know the conversation that he had with himself or his agent or his dad, but he came to the realization, and now he's not having to do that anymore because people know how tough he is. But he's like, if I want to stay in the NHL, I'm gonna have to fight, and I'm not going to be a goal scorer. I'm not playing on the first line, so I give him a lot of credit. And now he's created that space because of his reputation that he doesn't have to do it as often. So good for him.
Yeah, Tim, I kind of wanted I've been doing a lot of research on some of the work that you've been doing with Protected. Honestly, such a great initiative. You're the business development manager for Protected. For anyone that doesn't know, they're geared to provide vital support for law enforcement, firefighters, EMS personnel, to help mitigate, face injuries, as first responders. And it looks like the mission statement, our goal is to redefine sports safety and first responder safety on a global scale, by partnering with premier medical equipment manufacturers, NHL medical specialists, and designers to develop cutting edge neck and wrist guards along with cut resistant shirts. You want to speak on some of the work that you've been doing, especially after the, you know, tragic death of Adam Johnson, which rocked the entire hockey world. You know, when I saw that you know, there's been guys like you, TJ Oshie's been doing a ton to try to help this. Can you just talk about some of the work that you're doing, that you continue to do, to try to, you know, nip this in the ass and at least mitigate some of these major injuries?
Yeah, I saw a need for it because there's a huge shortage of neck protection in the U.S. The main manufacturers, Bauer and CCM, they don't own their own manufacturing plants. So my partner, fortunately, he owns 10 manufacturing plants in China. So I went to Ray Borilli, the longtime Blues trainer, and medical director for the St. Louis Blues. He's been there for 29 years, very well respected. He's been on USA Hockey's Olympic teams and so on. And I said, hey, let's design a neck guard, something to protect. So Ray actually said to me, he goes, Tim, he goes, if Adam Johnson had been wearing a neck guard, he goes, he still would have died, because the neck guards go, basically, they just about cover your Adam's apple. Well, the skate caught him up underneath the jawline and his carotid artery. So the neck guard that Ray and I designed goes up underneath the jawline. It is higher. And Perunovic and Saad have been wearing our neck guard. Parenko tried it on the other day, and we got to refit it for him because he's such a big man. But yeah, we're excited about it. It's we just got into some select Dick's Sporting Goods stores in the U.S. We're in negotiations with Pure Hockey, and we're now looking at law enforcement, people that I didn't even think about this, but people that work in prisons and get shit and so on, you know, in the neck area. So our neck guard, we just got approved through the National Hockey League, which was huge for us. And the NHL sent a memo to all 32 teams. Here's a list of approved manufacturers for neck guards. And every neck guard, anything cut resistant in the U.S. has to go through the American National Standards Institute to get a cut resistant rating. It's called an ANSI rating, ANSI. And it goes from A1 to A9. And ours came out in A9, the highest cut resistant product. So, for example, Bauer and CCM are an A2 and an A3. War Road's an A7, and we're the highest cut resistant product in A9. So yeah, we're excited about it. It's but it's all about brand recognition too. You know, you've got it. If I'm a parent and I'm walking into Dick's Sporting Goods and I see Bauer, I see CCM, and I see Protected, and I don't know much about Protected, I'm going to probably buy the Bauer product. So we brought Braden Shen on. He's endorsed our product, captain of the St. Louis Blues. And we're excited to go to market with this. And the other thing is we're co-branding it. So, for example, Kirkwood Hockey Association here in St. Louis, they wanted a red shirt because that's their color with the white K on the side with their logo, the Kirkwood. So we can co-brand it for hockey associations too, which other companies don't do.
Yeah, it's huge. Again, the initiative, there's a space there for it. There's, you know, you guys are really making an impact. Especially in the eyes of tragedy, just doing such great things. Tim, before I let you go, I got to ask, the infamous, you have one goal in your career.
Yeah.
And that is against a Hall of Famer. Not a big deal. Can you take us through that play? Can you take us through that play? Cause I like, again,
you know what? That's a funny story because it was December. I think it was December 19th. It was the year the Blues won the cup, not to make you feel bad, but you beat Boston in 2019. Yeah. So December of 2018, I happened to be working a home game in St. Louis, and Bortuzzo fires a puck in. And usually the defenseman will either rim it around the boards or shoot it towards a goal. He just shot it straight towards the end boards. And I see it coming, Chris, and it's waist high, so I can't jump and I can't duck. And so I just let it hit me, and it hits me in the left hip, and I'm all the ways in, almost in the corner. And as you know, it goes all the ways across the goal line, and Luongo sees it coming and he stumbles and it goes in. And I hit my head on the boards but I hear so now I'm on all fours on my knees and my hands, and I hear the horn go off, and the linesman comes over, Ryan Galloway, and he goes, "Are you okay?" And I go, "Did that fucking puck just go in the net?" And he goes, "Yep." And I'm like, my God. So I get up. Ray Barilli comes out. He helps me off the ice. I go in the trainer's room. They do the concussion protocol. And I come back out. And Luongo, who's just an awesome guy, he says, "Peelsy, are you okay?" And I said, "Yeah, Lou, I'm good." I said, "But guess what? For the rest of my career, I'm going to be able to say I scored on Roberto Luongo." So then I got the puck right here. The off-ice officials brought it in, and if I think I had the date correct, but it was period one, game number 470, scored by number 20. And the off-ice officials gave me this puck for my first goal in the NHL. So the funny part of the story was, so like I'm on the ice and like I'm getting a standing ovation. It's just, right. It's like crazy. And I get home and seriously, Chris, I'm not exaggerating. I've got 1,000 text messages, right, and missed calls. And it became so big. This story became so big that they, Savannah got, or the, yeah, I think it was Savannah, whoever the girls are in the Today Show. Yeah. They talked about it the next morning. They showed the play on the Today Show. And so anyway, I'm having a glass of wine with my wife at home and that night after I get home from the game. And I get a text message, and it's from Gretzky. And I think Brett Hull's got 745 goals. And we'll say it's 745. And Gretzky texts me. He goes, "You've only got 744 goals to go before you catch Brett Hull." And it just went crazy. And so the next 2 days later, I'm happen to be working in Chicago. Florida's on the road, played in St. Louis, day off. Now they're in Chicago. I'm doing the Panthers and the Blackhawks. And James Reimer's starting that game, yep, for Florida. And Luongo's the backup. And I come on the ice, and Lou comes right up to me, and he goes, "Pilsy," he goes, "they won't even start me now when you're reffing our games because they're afraid you're going to warn me." Like, and we laughed, and oh my God, it was. And Lou would be, and referees would go up to him and say, "Lou, you have no idea. Pilsy is bragging to everybody that he scored on Roberto Luongo," and Lou would just laugh.
I would never let that down. I was listening to we had Schmaltzy on 2 weeks ago, yeah, and I had saw that you were on his, and when he started telling that story, I'm like, why do I not like? And I remember it because I was obviously younger. But right. I went back and watched. I'm like, no fucking way this dude just scored on. It's such a classic.
It is a classic. And then, so January is when, you know, the Blues were in last place in the NHL. Bortuzzo Sanford got in a fight at practice. Yeah. It was just a shit show with the Blues. Yeah. Like, it looked like Armstrong was going to trade everybody in January. So I always, Robert Bortuzzo is one of the best guys ever. Like, he's just a great human being. And so I'd see, you know, I'd golf with him and see him around St. Louis, and
right,
we'd be having a few beers. And I go, "Borts," I go, the turnaround was not when you fought Sanford at practice. The turnaround was when you scored on me against Florida at home. And my wife's like, "You're unbelievable." She goes, "All the shit you've been through." She goes, "When you score. In the city that you live in for the, you know, the team that, you know, everyone here and, you know, I root for, yeah, now, the Blues, of course." Like, it didn't happen in Columbus or Calgary. It had, right, to happen in the town that I live in. It became a storybook ending.
Story, yeah. But hey, Tim, I can't thank you enough for taking the time out of your day. I know how fucking busy you are. Oh, so, you know, okay, you taking the time means the world to us.
Of course.
And you know, this was such a great talk. I'm glad we finally got to connect, and hopefully we can, you know, do something in the future as well.
Absolutely. If Boston continues to move on, we'll have to do it again. So
absolutely. That was Tim Peel, legendary referee, 1300 over 1300 games, 90 playoff games. I mentioned 2 Winter Classics, Sochi Olympics, and 1 career goal on Roberto Luongo. Tim, thank you so much, man. I greatly appreciate you, and enjoy the rest of the playoffs, my friend.
Thanks, Chris. Have a good day.
You too. Take care.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was the legendary Tim Peel. I can't believe we finally got the opportunity to talk to him. He's such a beauty. One of the funniest guys we've had on. I mentioned 1,362 games in the NHL, 90 games in the playoffs, 2 Winter Classics, 1 most notably in St. Louis, where he lives now. And again, he mentioned he loves the Blues. Also host of the Snipes and Stripes podcast on the No Filter Network with NHL legend, a legend in and out of himself, Jeremy Roenick. You can follow Tim at Tim C Peel 20. That's at Tim C Peel 20. And then the podcast account at Snipes Stripes. No space, capital S's on both, at Snipes Stripes. What an unbelievable interview. I just, again, being able to talk playoff hockey, we've got a lot on the line, especially tonight with this You know, with this drop that we decided to do, obviously, you know, mangled leg gate kind of set us back a little bit, but we're back, ladies and gentlemen. Huge tilt tonight. Again, Bruins, Leafs. Bruins can close out the series. 7 p.m. puck drop. That's going to be on Nesson and ESPN. And listen, I fully anticipate that the Bruins are going to be they're going to close this one out at home. There's no doubt in my mind. I think again, they've got their number with the Leafs this far. The Leafs are just in shambles right now. And you know, especially if Austin Matthews can't go tonight, that's going to be a huge blow for them. That's going to be a huge blow for that team. What's going on with him? It appears he had some illness along with Ilya Samsonov. And again, if the Bruins are able to take this, there's things for both teams. For one, for the Bruins, it's going to be a hell of a matchup against the Florida Panthers, rematch of last year. Again, Florida Panthers are playing great hockey right now. They're getting great play from, you know, up and down the lineup, guys like Matthew Tkachuk, who Peelsy and I mentioned, you know, guys like Sam Bennett, Alex Barkov. And then, you know, on defense, Gustav Forsling, Aaron Ekblad, just to name a couple. And Bobrovsky is playing at a Vezina level right now. So it's by no means going to be a cakewalk. And then on the opposite side of things for Toronto, what does that mean next for Toronto? You got to think after another first round exit that this team is going into, again, a rough time. There's a lot of quality head coaches out there. You got to think one to two of those guys in that core four are going to be gone. Now, which ones? It remains to be seen. It's too hard to predict right now. There's a lot of moving pieces as far as, you know, no trade clauses. You know, contracts and whatnot. I mean, they're making good coin. So it's very difficult to move players like that who are making that much coin, who just came off a first round exit. So a lot can happen tonight. And I mentioned earlier on Twitter, we did a little poll. We are going to have boots on ground tonight. We are going to have boots on ground. I'm going to be hobbling around. If you see me, kick me in the right leg, just not the left. We're still hobbling a little bit, but again, because it's the cup, that's what we do. Kind of just going over the rest of the, you know, the playoffs, things that I've noticed, some news and notes. I mentioned Florida eliminated Tampa. You know, Peelsy doesn't think that Stammer is going to be leaving Tampa, and I really hope not, to be honest. He's one of those guys that's been around that team literally his entire career. First overall pick. And he's a guy that just would look weird, just look bizarre wearing another sweater. I hope he stays. And again, I like that team. Nikita Kucherov, 100 apples. I mean, he had the point differential from Nikita Kucherov from their top score. And shout out to Jay Swish, the People's Insider, for this stat. Again, Nikita Kucherov, and then their next leading scorer was Braden Point, had a 53-point differential, which is absolutely outrageous for anyone that wants to go look up other guys like Connor McDavid and Draisaitl. Again, McKinnon, Rantanen. It's almost double what those guys are, which is absolutely insane. It's an outrageous stat. And when Jay Swish ever said that, I went and looked, and that insane stat. So again, is John Cooper going to stay? What, you know, there are going to be other jobs open. I don't know. You know, Kevin Weeks had put out an interesting tweet, you know, on the 29th, which was that yesterday, I believe, you know, saying there could be one current NHL head coach that might potentially hit or surpass Mike Babcock's industry leading $7 million per year deal he signed with the Toronto Maple Leafs. It would take plenty of factors for it to align, but plots are thickening. And, you know, you go in the comments and you read, you know, potential names. Rod Brind'Amour was brought up. You know, Craig Berube was brought up. John Cooper's name was thrown out there. He's obviously had tremendous success with this Lightning team. Could he go elsewhere and get a bag? Absolutely. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind. But who knows? Again, that's a little while away. You know, and something else I wanted to bring up too is, you know, we're now 2-2 in this Dallas and Vegas series. And this, I went into this saying that this was my favorite series. You know, looking at it from Vegas' standpoint, you're getting all your guys back. Mark Stone's back in the lineup. You're going to get to see him, Thomas Hurdle, Jack Eichel. You know, Logan Thompson's playing pretty well. And then on the flip side for Dallas, their combination of both, you know, veteran talent who have been there, and then their young bucks that are coming up, and you're seeing it firsthand. Wyatt Johnston becoming one of the premier players. I mean, granted, it's very early. He's rookie. His rookie year went really well. But this kid is just absolutely disgusting. I mean, his game winner that he had the other night, that angle, that shot, was just disgusting. He's playing with, you know, Logan Stankoven's up, you know, Rupe Hintz, Robo, Jason Robertson. That's one line combination I really liked, was Stankoven, Rupe Hintz, and Robo. This Dallas team is just fun to watch. You know, I think if they can get some more consistent goaltending out of Jake Oettinger, and they just tied the series. We're back to 0-0 at this point. And I fully anticipate this series goes seven games. And that was one of the ones I really wanted to touch on, just because it's been such a phenomenal series thus far. So that pretty much wraps up episode 40 of Drop the Mitts Hockey Podcast. I had mentioned earlier, brought to you in partnership with Drop Mitts Hockey. We're on our own at this point, doing everything on our own. It's been a hell of a ride. It's been, you know, we've worked with some really great people, and it just came to the point where we just kind of wanted to do our own thing and just let it ride out and start to have some fun again. So, you know what, we're really excited for what's coming. This was a great interview. So that, again, for all you guys that love the game of hockey, enjoy this time of year, because there's nothing like playoff hockey. I mentioned we're going to have boots on the ground tonight. It is Tuesday, so this is going to be, could be an elimination game for Toronto. But we shall see. Again, that is episode 40 of Drop the Mitts Hockey Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Davis. And once again, I can't thank you guys enough for, you know, all the support on all the socials. You know, you listening to our podcast, you know, our shorts, subscribing to our YouTube. We've got almost 100 subscribers at this point, which is just insane. I'd be grateful for one. And again, just really being so supportive and just super grateful for, you know, for you all. So again, stay safe out there. Enjoy this beautiful year of playoff hockey. And we will see you next week. Thank you, guys.